Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by Benjamin Nathan, Associate Director of Security and Identity Management Services at the Weill Cornell Medical College. The session is entitled, Using Non-Traditional Security Risk Assessments to Clearly Express Risk, Make Persuasive Budget Requests, and Showcase Positive Trends.
Good morning, everyone. I was out there for a while pushing you forward because 810 and security in this humongous cavernous room, the closer you get, the better for Ben, because then he feels like he's not talking to the world way out there. Welcome to the session, Using Non-Traditional Security Risk Assessments to Clearly Express Risk, Make Persuasive Budget Requests, and Showcase Positive Trends. So I hope you're in the right place. Our speaker today is Benjamin Nathan. He is the Associate Director of Security and Identity Management in the Information Technologies and Services Department at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. Ben and his team work to identify, correlate, and respond to security incidents. He's also responsible for policy creation, security compliance, including HIPAA, forensics, incident response, and IT risk management. And before we start, since it's the beginning and first session of the day, I'll just remind you to put your beepy devices to silent, please. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Can everyone hear me okay? All right, great. So, quick agenda. I'm going to talk just a little bit about the college and the department that I work at, and then I'm going to get into what I see as sort of some problems with traditional security risk assessments, and then I'm going to talk about some possible solutions or a solution that I've been using, which is more of a portfolio approach, and I'll kind of dive into how it works and sort of the product that you can end up with if you choose to use it as well. So Cornell, you know, you're all familiar with Cornell University, which is up in Ithaca. My college is in New York City, so we're obviously part of the university. We feel very close to the university, but we have our own administrative departments, our own IT departments, and we end up sort of running ourselves fairly independently. We have a lot of peer institutions at the medical college. So we're one of two teaching colleges for New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is a big, huge hospital in New York. And we also peer with Memorial Sloan Kettering, a hospital for special surgery, Rockefeller University, and down the list. And when I say peer, sort of one way or another, they're either part of our network or almost on our network. And these are institutions that are right nearby. They're also heavily into research and education. We have users going back and forth. We have data going back and forth. So sometimes it feels bigger than it is. And then my department, the Information Technologies and Services Department, we have three data centers. We support about 6,000 workstations, 60-plus terabytes of data. We have we run email system for us and the hospital, so we have about 25,000 email users, et cetera. Okay, let's get into it. So this is a sort of a diagram of our network architecture, and being in security, I focus on sort of four major categories of traffic. So really sort of intranet and extranet type of traffic, stuff that traverses our firewall and gets into our internal networks. The sort of network cores, which you can see vertically in the middle there, and then our server networks. So it's not that I don't pay attention to workstations or extranets and stuff like that, but you know, the prize that we're trying to protect at Cornell is generally in those server networks. So when I started the security and identity management group a couple years ago, the thing that we knew we needed a lot of security. We really had very, very little. We hadn't had a formal group dedicated to it before. And the struggle I had was, what do you do first, right? You take a look at this network and you say, okay, there's problems everywhere. How do I know which one is, you know, really a big deal and which one isn't, and in what order to approach it? So I tried some, different permutations of the classic identify vulnerabilities, identify threats, determine impacts, and then, you know, kind of do this calculation that turns into something that, that we tend to call risk. And I had a lot of trouble with this. I'm going to go into why, but I'd be curious, have people done this at their institutions? Maybe, yes. And was it amazing? Did you solve everything? Yeah, I've had a lot. Here's the trouble that I ran into. This may be familiar to you. Number one, I felt like there was just no such thing as a perfect knowledge of threats. It was very, very difficult to kind of look either at a macro level or a micro level and sort of have a comprehensive knowledge of all the threats that were out there. I found this I think is the most telling. I found that the likelihood calculations were essentially random. You know, they say that like a monkey can throw darts at a dartboard to choose the stocks to buy, and that's how I felt about likelihood calculations. You know, they could just be whatever I wanted, and the problem with that is that it ends up not being persuasive when you go to sort of request money or to try to make, you know, your project the one that the department tries to do. They catch on very quickly, I think, that likelihood calculations are I don't know, a little bit of a joke. So I also felt very similarly about impact, that it was very hard to predict. We say, you know, if this happens, then this could happen, but my experience is that that's a guessing game. And that all kind of added up to ineffectual. I got no kind of leverage when I went to ask for money. And I think it was because the assessment was easily questioned, and I couldn't, you know, sort of talk my way through every single assumption we had made and say, you know, this is why it makes sense. Or even if I could, I had no real evidence that the problems we had were real or the solutions were appropriate. So I found this really time-consuming, and because it was sort of so time-consuming, so inaccurate, so difficult to manage, I started to ask myself, is this risk management or is this just risky management, right? So I kind of went back and said, what do I do? And I figured out I wanted to be able to do sort of these four things. I wanted to be able to identify and assess a comprehensive set of security threats. I wanted to address and reduce the risk that were presented by those threats. I wanted to measure the value of the investments that we made in security, and I wanted to measure our improvement over time. So kind of in a larger sense, I really wanted to know how the security program added value, and I wanted to know how to measure our performance. And to me, that seemed somewhat like what you would see in a financial market as a portfolio. And so this, to me, was our risk management portfolio. So, excuse me, how did I do that? This is the original risk assessment model again. And I eventually moved to a three-step model that sort of supplanted the original. The steps are, number one, identify security threats by cataloging security solutions. Number two is break risk into categories. And number three is score all security solutions against all categories. And the highest scoring solutions will reduce or address the most risk. So I'm going to dig into this because this is the hard part. Any questions so far? Okay. So, identify threats by cataloging security solutions. Again. Here's the idea behind this. I'm going to back up a little bit. Over time, starting sort of in academia with the open source community and then moving out into the industry, there's this sort of large set of existing technological solutions and best practices and processes in the field of information security. And these technologies and processes have matured to the point, I think, where over 90% of the security threats out there can be identified by surveying and cataloging them. And I'm going to look at an example to try to make this clearer. So suppose you look at the security solution malware protection. If we want to use this solution to identify threats, we ask ourselves, you know, what threat does this address? And obviously it addresses malware. Now, malware may or may not be something that threatens you. But the point is, you didn't need to come up with malware software on your own. You added it to your catalog provided to you by the information security industry. So I'm not claiming that all threats can be identified this way, but I do think it's well over 90%. It's, you know, there's sort of a long list out there. And if you look into the industry, you know, there's all kinds of magazines, websites, books, whatever you want, that every year publish this huge list of the best in this topic or the best in that, you know, the best antivirus, the best firewall, and on and on and on. Those are what I use as my catalog, and I'll show you. So I'm going to do, there's some of the industry stuff that I use. I'm going to do some examples to help. So to identify threats, again, the premise is to identify threats, we're starting with security solutions. And I'm going to try a security solution called intrusion prevention. Right? We all know what this is. And we ask ourselves, what threat does intrusion prevention address? And it, you know, in this case, it's pretty simple. It addresses network intrusions. So how about something like network access control? Right? That solution addresses sort of the threat of rogue computers. Right? Client encryption, unencrypted clients. Data classification, which is a process, right, not a technology, addresses inappropriate security mechanisms. Awareness training addresses end-user errors. And the final list that I came up with, I think today, is around 75 solutions, which I'm not going to obviously list here, but you'll, if you want to get them off of the materials for this presentation, they're in the spreadsheets. So a couple of points, right? Some security solutions are going to address multiple risks. This, I think, is fine. You know, I went through this exercise listing security solutions and the threats they address here to make clear the argument that security industry has provided us with sort of a panoply of solutions and that those solutions map directly to threats. But you'll see in the next selection or the next section, the solutions we're really going to worry about going forward, and then I think you'll see why. So yeah, you'll see stuff like that. So break risk into categories, right? when I assess risk at the medical college, I use 13 different risk categories or factors to understand how something might adversely affect our security. So they are susceptibility to internal attack, external attack, network visibility, audit and regulatory requirement, and on down this list, right? So this is sort of everything that I try to worry about when I'm thinking of what are our risks, what are the risks in our environment. And I'm gonna, in a minute, I'm gonna start assessing security solutions against each of these risk categories. And when we do that and when I do that at work, I'm looking for solutions that help me do this, which is reduce susceptibility to internal attack, reduce susceptibility to external attack, improve or increase network visibility, and down the list. So let's just check back with the model for a second. We're cataloged solutions, or we've identified security solutions, and we've broken risk down into categories, and now it's time to score them. And this is where hopefully you'll see it come together. So here's how the scoring works. I take each security solution, and I'll start with intrusion prevention again, and I give it a score based on each risk category. So I ask myself an important question while I'm scoring it. In this case, I ask myself, does intrusion prevention reduce susceptibility to external attack, external attack, and let's say it does, right? So I'm going to give it a score, and I'm going to give it a 10 here. Why did I give it a 10? So this is how I kind of rate these. One is no effect. So if I said, does intrusion prevention reduce susceptibility to external attack, and that was no, then I would give this a 1. 5 is sort of an indirect effect. You know, it does it, but it's not made to do it. There's a side effect that does it. And 10 is a sort of a direct significant effect. And I think we can agree that, you know, when it comes to intrusion prevention, this is what it's designed to do. So this is a good one, you know, for our example. So I'll do some others. Does intrusion prevention, in this case, improve policy enforcement, right? This is another one of those 13 risk categories. Let's say it does, but it's an indirect effect, right? So I give it a 5, and you can see I'm totaling these at the bottom. Does it improve or increase network visibility? We can say yes, but very slightly, right? I mean, it's a definite side effect. I'll give it a 3 in this case. So Here's just, again, a subset, and you start to get the idea of how these scores kind of come together. So the totals, these are actual real totals from my most recent risk assessment. They're very high. What I do is I multiply some of the risk factors. So there's a weight that goes into some of the risk factors. So because I want the scores to reflect that something like reducing susceptibility to internal attack is more important to me than maybe network visibility or policy compliance or whatever. I mean, this is something you'll have control over. But in our case, there's, I think, five of the categories that we weight. So we've done the three steps of the model. We've identified security solutions by our security threats by cataloging security solutions, and we've scored them against a comprehensive set of risks. So let's see how we use these scores to reduce risk at the institution. Okay. So a fully populated spreadsheet looks something like this. I don't expect you to be able to read it, and I would never expect you to try to present it this way, right? That would be a horrible thing. It looks like a tremendous amount of data, and this is actually just a piece. But there's a better way that I think is the real value of all of this, which is to use a scorecard. And this is, you know, an Excel radar chart. It's easy to create, but it looks kind of like a bullseye, which I really like. And what I did is I've listed the technology security solutions that were kind of along the left side of our grid on the edge, around the edge of the chart. So you see them: intrusion detection, network behavior, anomaly detection, packet inspection, all the way down. And each little diamond there represents the total risk score for each individual technology sorted from highest to lowest, which is important because if you don't sort them, it just looks like a big mess. So this is the, you know, these are the same things that line up here on the right, those total scores, but again, you know, look much prettier this way. And the idea is, well, let's go into it a little further. So the idea is that for every technology solution identified up there, if I were to implement it, it would reduce risk based on the amount of the total risk score that's up there. So, for example, if I were to implement intrusion detection, What it means is I am most threatened by not having intrusion detection, right? I've scored everything against those risk categories, and because I don't have an intrusion detection system, I have tremendous risk against, you know, external attack, internal attack, policy compliance, and on down the list. So the scorecard tells us that if I were to implement intrusion detection, I would reduce risk by, in this case, something around the lines of 250 points. The next one is behavior anomaly detection, packet inspection. And so the idea is that, you know, because I didn't have these, I'm very susceptible to the attacks that they would otherwise stop, right? Because I have the security risk categories that I use to score them against, I sort of know which ones help me more than other ones. In that way, the graph kind of shows you priority, right? So the highest scoring items indicate the biggest threats, and when it's sorted this way, it's easy for senior managers to see the sort of the entire risk continuum, each possible solution, and how much risk you currently have today by not having these, in this case, technologies, but it could just easily be processes like data classification. And it's sort of also very easy to see your greatest opportunities for improvement, so which I think is a kind of a nice way to look at it. So using this data, I made a budget request for my top scoring items, right? I said I need money to do intrusion detection, I need money to do behavior anomaly detection, etc. And I explained that these items address our most pressing risks and that I was measuring them against 13 categories. And there's the 13 categories again. And it worked. So here's what we did. We bought an intrusion detection system. We bought a vulnerability scanner. And we sort of I didn't list it there, but we also got a network behavior anomaly detection system. And after implementing these technologies, I rescored everything, and then I place the scores on top of each other, which looks like this. So the newer scores are the red set, and the blue set is those original scores. And, you know, some really interesting things happen. The first thing to note is that some scores went down, right? And that's there. These, like, extremely low-risk scores indicate near-zero risk, and the change is a direct effect from the systems we implemented. So we're really happy about this, right? It says that before intrusion detection, I was at a risk rating of 250. I was tremendously susceptible to the things that intrusion detection would otherwise stop. Now, I have almost zero risk rating, which means, you know, if I were to buy another intrusion detection system and put it in, it wouldn't do anything for me, right? Because I already have one. It already stopped all those risks. You can also see some of the scores went up, which is interesting. Usually what I've seen this mean is that new risks have emerged, or new pressures increase risk scores for a particular session, and usually the pressures are regulatory. So I think for us, in the between these two, like the Information Security Breach and Notification Act in New York came out, which means we have to notify people if we lose their social security numbers or their credit card numbers. And one of the ways to mitigate against that is to encrypt the data that is lost, and in that case you don't have to notify. So you can see on the sort of lower right around 530, the decline encryption score leapt up, and that was the reason why. And then here is intrusion prevention. That was sort of an interesting one. So detection prevention, one just tells you what's going wrong, the other actually stops it. The problem there was simply that I failed to include this. Now, the reason was because I knew there was no way on earth they would let me buy one. But I did it the second year round because I thought we'd get more traction. I thought we'd show that we were doing some good work. And it turned out to be very, very high scoring in our model, because we get, you know, just like you, I'm sure, attacked all day long over these ports that are open in our firewalls, et cetera. So intrusion prevention would help us a lot there. Let's see. So I found this graph really valuable because it shows improvement over time. You can use it to kind of prove to your senior managers and your auditors that you're reducing institutional risk. And you can expand on it. You can drill in a little further, which we really like to do. So I've sort of zoomed in on the upper right quadrant. And this is where we kind of initially reduced the most risk, as shown by like the blue and red lines. And you can use this kind of exploded view to demonstrate measurements of the security process. So that source fire solution cost us about $150,000. We already owned this Arbor Peak Flow solution, but we were just using it for network. Our network group was using it for their tasks. We started to use it as an anomaly detection agent, so it became something that we used as well, and that was zero cost. We bought a vulnerability scanner, and that was about $25,000. And you can also see how long it took us to do the implementation. So 1,250 hours to implement the intrusion detection system, 1,000 hours to do vulnerability scanning, although that's seemingly a never-ending process. And we got some sort of interesting side effects, which I really liked, in the layer of packet inspection and firewall re-architecture. These capabilities came along with SourceFire and Arbor. So what I learned from that is that it's sometimes useful to pre-score, to score your improvement before you go buy something, because you may see other effects that you weren't anticipating. And it gets a little tricky. You have to ask yourself, if I were to implement this solution, how would it reduce these risks? But if you do it right, you'll see scores go down, maybe for things that are not directly related to that that solution. So this is good. I think what I've gotten out of this view and what's been really helpful is that it highlights work you've completed successfully, right? You can kind of show, here's the risk that I reduced. And it adds credibility to your next budget request the next year, whenever you do it again, because you not only did you implement the thing you said you were going to implement, but when you rescored it against your model, you showed that here's risks being reduced at an institutional level or a department level, and whatever you want to do. So, just so you know, it's true. You should also, this is just as valuable as to do this versus processes or procedures. So this, none of these are technologies, right? You don't necessarily have to buy anything, but things like risk frameworks, policy creation, data classification can be scored against that same, those same 13 categories. And I scored them last year and, or I guess 2 years ago and 1 year ago. So you can see some of the same patterns. I think they're really interesting. Some risks were reduced, right, and others were increased. One to look at is, I think I highlighted it, is policy creation and policy compliance and procedure creation. So year one, we didn't really have any security policies, which is bad. They came out as, you know, they're very high risk for us. We created them all, right? And then what we found is, well, now we need to comply with them. So in the second year, first year, create risk, reduce, or, sorry, create policies, reduce risk. But, oh, you know, now we have policy, no risk there, but now we have to comply, so huge risk there. And the same with, you know, procedure creation is the same thing. But it's good. It kind of makes these things jump out at you over time so that you can, you know, reprioritize year by year or whenever you want to redo the score. So this is the newest set, which I compiled for our fiscal year, I guess, 09, which was last spring, summer. And the high scoring items for each, let's see, I pre-scored what, so here's our high scoring items, policy compliance, you can see, procedure creation, intrusion prevention, network access, and I sort of pre-scored against what I want to get once we've done it all. And so in fiscal year 2010, this is what I hope our scores look like, right? I hope that we have complete policy compliance, that we have implemented our intrusion prevention system, that we've done data classification, awareness, training, encryption. And these are all the things that are in process in my group right now. And for the second year in a row, we got sort of all the money and the resources that we asked for to do these projects. You can see I left a couple out. Network access control just seemed not yet ready for us, and I don't remember why we didn't do packet inspection. And here's all the reduction that we're looking for. So the final, you know, output of this kind of risk scorecard and assessment framework is a report I write up with proposals for the year, and they include the goal selection. So why did I pick the ones that I picked? They're not always the highest scoring ones. You should. It's helped me a lot to think about, could we actually do it? Is the technology ready? Is the institution ready, et cetera? So that's kind of the reasons for the choices, the reasons for the omissions, and what it'll take to achieve the goals. And for that part, it's money and hours spent doing the implementations. And you know, I'm able to get traction on that because we track it for the you know, year by year for the new stuff that we implement. So people tend to take that, you know, fairly seriously. So some observations, let's see. Sometimes the scores go up. We talked about that. You know, pressures change and new risks emerge, new laws come out, or the institution, you know, a breach will happen. Something will occur to make it so that you need to pay more attention to something that before possibly you had to pay less attention to. Sometimes the higher scores don't get included in those funding requests, and like I said, you know, the technology could be immature. It could require too much change. The resources aren't there or whatever, or usually I try to score before ever thinking about cost and then think about cost a little bit at the end, which once you do that, sometimes it just becomes impossible. I found that the model is pretty scalable, so you could do it to assess what your biggest threats are, and then you could do it to assess everything that solves that threat, right? Like I put every intrusion prevention system out there through this categorical assessment. Does it, you know, how much does it reduce external attack or my vulnerability to external attack and et cetera? And that helped us choose the product that we eventually implemented, which was the SourceFire solution. And then the more people that help you do the score, the better. Definitely your accuracy will increase. The scores become kind of more defensible, and there's a bias that comes out of it. When I was doing it on my own, I think it was a little different than when I got people in a room and we worked through it and came up with, I think, better scores. So just some conclusions. The model I'm using, again, I first identify threats by cataloging security solutions and best practice security processes based on the idea that the sort of maturing field of information security provides a nearly comprehensive list to work from. And then I assess the solutions by scoring them against a series of risk categories. And after implementing the solution, I measure the process over time. Let's see how this is going here. There's the measuring, including costs and resources and time to implement. And then I measure improvement to the overall risk level at the institution, so you can see how that can change over time. And that's our risk management portfolio right there. Well, I mean, not necessarily the hammers, but maybe the houses. I mean, the point is, how did you know that doing that data classification was valuable, right? I mean, how did you know that there was data out there that needed to be assessed and addressed in some way? And what I'm saying is that the only way you know that is to look at data classification against all other security processes you could be doing, right? And say, this one reduces the most risk for me. This is the one I should prioritize to do this year. And then you can dive in whatever way makes the most sense. But what I didn't want to do is assume that something like data classification or whatever it is that's out there was the best way to spend my time, right? Very limited resources. So I needed a starting point. And the starting point was, let's figure out how valuable it would be for me to do that. Yeah, the medical college, yeah. I've used the Cornell Spider a little bit, but, right, that would be sort of an approach that would let you find what's out there, right? Also not a bad place to go. But first, like, you know, you have to decide, is data classification a way to spend my time? I mean, setting up Spider and searching through the entire network is a time-consuming process, right? You want to know that you're doing it for a good reason. Well, you're faster than me.
Well, what I'm saying is that there are existing methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to vary a lot, but some of the ways that we measure it is we kind of map our policies to, systems that can check against stuff that might violate them. So was there like a use of a password that was, you know, by a person who shouldn't have used it? Or was there, any other number of violations, right? Did the firewall stop everything it was supposed to stop and on and on? And so you can go back later and say, here's all my policies and here's times when it did work, when it did do what it was supposed to do, and when it didn't do what it was supposed to do. That's probably the easiest way that I found to kind of do that. And we use, a sim or whatever to sort of track all those events and shoot out reports that let us know, metrics that let us know how well we're doing against those policies. Does that make sense? Other questions? All right, well, thank you for waking up early. I appreciate it.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.